Today, Oz GDP? Didn't we do well? No, not really. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analyst, from those posts covering finance and property news. Well, superficially, Australia's economy maintained its momentum in the 3 months through to June, with the expansion underpinned by exports and sectors less impacted by the Reserve Bank's 12 interest rate increases. But that said, key things from the accounts are ongoing weakness in consumer spending, slowing growth in employee compensation, rapid deterioration in productivity, but offset by boosts from business investment and services exports, but which is a huge fudge factor. The ABS reported that gross domestic product advanced 0.4%. That's the same pace as the prior quarter and in line with economists' estimates. And from a year earlier, the economy grew 2.1% from an upwardly revised 2.4%. However, while the economy grew by 0.4% in aggregate terms, it shrank by 0.3% for the second consecutive quarter in per capita terms. That's a more realistic measure than gross GDP, which is of course inflated by high migration and hence population growth. Per capita GDP also declined by 0.3% over the 2022-23 financial year, so this is a long-term problem. Whilst at the aggregate level, investment contributed 0.5 percentage points to growth, led by 8.2% increase in public investment. Private investment increased by just 0.6%. But consumption contributed just 0.1 percentage points to GDP. Within that, household consumption grew just 0.1%, and that slowed slightly, but remained positive. Government spending increased by 0.4%. Discretionary consumer spending fell 0.5%, and that contracted for the third consecutive quarter, highlighted by a fall of 2.5% in recreation, furnishings and household equipment, down 2.5% too. Other discretionary spending, including transport, hotels and restaurants, continued to increase, but only at a very subdued pace than in previous quarters. An essential spending, though, lifted by 0.5%, but this was driven by higher costs on goods bought, and by the way, people are buying less. Compensation of employees continues to rise at 1.6%, but that's down from 2.4% in March and the lowest growth since September 2021, which was a period impacted by Delta. The sharp increase in compensation is starting to fade, therefore, in the June quarter, and it's only slightly above the average at 1.3% in 2019, that's prior to the pandemic. Prospects for a recovery in household spending under these circumstances are not, frankly, encouraging. GDP per hour worked fell 2% in the June quarter to be down by 3.6% over the year, and real unit labour costs lifted by 3.2% to be up 5.8% over the year. While those measures are volatile, the accounts continue to highlight the nation's productivity challenge, and it's worth thinking about this. Due to such a poor productivity profile, even a modest rate of wage inflation will meaningfully lift broader inflation. Company profits, private non-financial for example, contracted sharply, down 8.6%, and mining profits retreated from their highs on lower commodity prices, while profits from the broader economy fell on challenging conditions, patchy sales and rising costs. But total financial corporations posted a 1.6% increase after 2 weak quarters on the lift in lending for the established housing market. So the housing market once again saves the GDP day. However, gross mixed income spanning small businesses and the farm sector fell for a fourth consecutive quarter, down by 2.7% over the quarter and down 8.8% over the year. Net trade added 0.8 percentage points with higher exports of goods and services that rose at 4.3%, highlighted by service exports rising by 12.1% from education and travel, with international students and Chinese tourists being strong contributors. But as I've said before, the quirk in reporting this as an export distorts the accounts and covers up the real story of weaker growth. Imports were lower, and inventory changes were the most significant drag on GDP growth, dropping 1.1 percentage points from the overall number. Performances across the nation varied, however, with final state demand up notably in Queensland and South Australia at 1.3%, but to a lesser degree in New South Wales, just up 0.8%, and in Victoria up 0.7%, while more subdued outcomes were observed in both Western Australia at just 0.4% and Tasmania, which fell 0.2%. So, to be clear, the main driver of Australia's GDP growth is the Albanese government's unprecedented immigration program, which delivered a record net 502,000 visa holders, excluding tourists, into Australia in the year to July, with student visas accounting for 297,000 of those arrivals. So overall, therefore, the economy is not growing quickly enough to absorb these arrivals, and everyone's share of the economic pie and living standards are shrinking alongside the shortage of rental homes and infrastructure. Now, of course, earlier in the week, the RBA held rates at 4.1%, while signalling concerns about uncertainty from a slowing China and pressure on households. So that begs the question, will the GDP result bolster the Reserve Bank's confidence that it can bring the economy in for a soft landing, given the data points to a further deterioration in the position of rate-sensitive consumers, an outcome the RBA will closely monitor? And of course, it regularly highlights the uncertainty over the outlook for the household sector. From the RBA's perspective, today's report suggests the economy is navigating the tightening cycle with an encouraging degree of resilience, said Andrew Bach, chief economist for Goldman Sachs in Australia. Still, he said that elevated labour unit costs and persistently poor productivity underscores the risk that inflation will prove uncomfortably sticky. Australia's expansion is forecast to weaken from here as households face a squeeze from higher rates and prices, with today's data showing private consumption just 0.1% higher over the quarter. The savings ratio declined to 3.2% from a downwardly revised 3.6% 3 months earlier. The weakness reflects the impact of the RBA's 4 percentage points of hikes since May 2022 and is among reasons for the central bank's 3 consecutive rate pauses at 4.1%. We think the accumulation of monetary tightening could start to hit the consumer more sharply in the next few quarters, said Robert Thompson, macro rate strategist at the Royal Bank of Canada. Whether this is enough to get inflation down to avoid further rate hikes remains to be seen. There is also growing uncertainty around China, the biggest buyer of Australian goods and services, as it grapples with a housing crisis. In recent times, Australia has benefited from China-driven high export prices that helped return the budget to surplus for the first time in 15 years. Central banks worldwide are now near the peak of their tightening cycle as inflationary pressures begin to abate, and the Federal Reserve is seen as likely to skip its September meeting, with consumer prices moderating modestly in July in what was the smallest back-to-back inflation readings in over 2 years. But economists see a 50% chance that Australia's $2.5 trillion economy will slip into recession over the next 12 months. But of course, the government went full spruik on the GDP result, in pressure, Treasurer Jim Chalmers said after the release, highlighting the slowdown in China. We know there are challenges ahead, but we face them from a position of relative strength. But the point I want to make here is that the true story of pressure continuing to build on households is something that we can't walk away from. And whilst we can fudge the numbers with using the student education sector to artificially support the GDP number, the truth is that the economy is slowing quite fast and inflation is not yet under control. And in fact, with poor productivity, as I said before, the risk is that inflation again gets out of hand, and that is going to mean interest rates will still have to go higher. So to my mind, we haven't yet seen the end of the rate hiking cycle, which is what the Reserve Bank, I think, also indicated in their brief notes on Tuesday. But how high rates will have to go and what the implications will be are yet to play out. But meantime, many households are caught in the headlights of these higher rates and diminishing capacity to spend. And my stress data to the end of August, which I've just run, continues to highlight the challenges ahead. And we'll look at this in more detail next Tuesday on my live show, when we can look at it down the postcode level. So I'm afraid that I'm not seeing much good news here at all, and the risks to the downside are significant and building.
Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.